everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from IrishSportsDaily.com. I'm your host, Greg Flamong, and with me, as always, is Jamie Uwayama, Mr. Jamie University. Tuesday, March 26th, we were greeted with some bad news this morning. Ben Morrison went under the knife. He had surgery on his shoulder. Got a lot of shoulder injuries are going around, Jamie, as everyone can see. Jamie's in a sling. We got a lot of shoulder problems going on. Maybe Ben Morrison was playing hockey, Jamie. Maybe that's what happened.
Maybe.
Someone landed full body weight on him, and so now he's got a shoulder injury. But Notre Dame fans were greeted with that news. He's going to be out for the remainder of spring practice. And I got to tell you, last sentence, Jamie, I did not like. It could have worded it a little bit better. It sounds like he'll be fine for the season, but expected to return for 2024. Well, okay. Like maybe worded a different way. Expected to be ready for the 2024 season. Expected to be ready for fall camp. We don't really know the nature of that injury. That's going to be very difficult to figure out today, at least. Maybe there'll be more information once Marcus Freeman talks to the media again. But we were greeted with that news. And then over the weekend, Notre Dame announced that Riley Leonard had another surgery on his ankle. So he's going to miss probably the remainder of spring ball. Marcus Freeman left it open a little bit in terms of, you know, could he actually come back? I don't know. It seems like not. You're going to have surgery on the ankle. You've already had multiple surgeries on the ankle as it is. What are you going to bring him back for the spring game? Like, that's not going to
doesn't make sense. No.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So expect for him to miss the bulk of spring practice. So that's the news. We're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss all the other news and notes. And you know, we're also going to build. We're going to start a new segment called If You Build It. We're going to build a perfect quarterback. We're going to start doing those things during the off season. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If this is your first time catching our show, please hit the like button. Please hit subscribe. Please hit the notification bell so you know whenever it is we are going live. Links to the podcast are in the description below, and you can check us out there on the audio format if that's your preferred way of doing things. Jamie, first of all, how's your shoulder? How are you doing? Are you getting better
every day? Just all I can ask right now. That's just progressing. That's about the only update I can give. So
I'm having a hard time with Mike and Christian are on Power Hour giving my guy slack, you know, giving you a hard time. Yeah. It's terrible, Jamie.
You're out here.
It's all fun and games, and they're making jokes. You're out here typing up articles, writing articles, one hand, two hand. Your wife is performing her physio duties. You're making it happen for the team. I feel like that should be noted by everyone. This is a real thing that's going on.
Well, you know how it is with Mike and Christian. Publicly, they tease, but privately they're supportive. So that's why I can.
Yeah. I'm just saying I'm sticking up for my guy on Hitting Hustle.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Sure. No problem. All right, Jamie. Let's start with Ben Morrison since that's the new news of the day. Shoulder injury, right? I think it's kind of like the Riley Leonard thing, right? Like, okay, Christian Gray, you know, put him on the boundary. Let's see how it goes. Jade Mickey's going to get a ton of reps. A bunch of other corners, all the other corners, just like everyone just kind of moves up on the reps aspect of it. Jamie, what do you take from this? Is it a big deal given what we know right now?
I mean, it could be a big deal, but I think it's because – but we just don't know.
Right.
Like that, like you said, that wording there at the end, you didn't say at the start of whatever, didn't say he's back for camp. Certainly everybody's thinking about Texas A&M. Is he going to be ready for Texas A&M? I think everybody knows that follows Notre Dame football that Ben Morrison is an elite corner. Look at what he did against the top boundary receivers they faced last year, right? Yeah. Like those guys pretty much got nothing. against him when they were matched up with him, right? And he was the one guy too, right? Like, you can say that certainly there's cases too where they were helping with Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, over the top in some cases because they didn't want to give him too many one-on-ones, but he had him one-on-one quite a bit. And he's someone who's you could put one-on-one against pretty much anyone. And to have to not have that is would be a big deal. Would be a big deal, right? Yeah. Because that's how someone like, you know, Stanford's Elikai Manor could go off against somebody else. I mean, he certainly, this is which of I'm always going to push back against the Travis Hunter as cornerback one. I know the guy's playing both ways and stuff, but I mean, he got cooked by Elikai Manor, and that did not happen to Benjamin Morrison. You know, so I think if he's unavailable for any amount of games, it's not a good thing, right? It's obviously not a good thing. He's an All-American. He's one of the best in the country. So to not have him will be bad. In saying that, it's just like the same kind of thing with Leonard, where it's you're going to get these guys with opportunities now. And like you said, you mentioned Gray on the boundary, which I think is that's where he's going to play long term. That's where when Morrison is gone, Christian Gray will be the boundary starting boundary corner for for Notre Dame. I don't think too many people have any doubts about that. So you're going to have him kind of have to take on that role. I think certainly Mickey, what it does for Mickey is it kind of like he kind of solidifies it. It's like, wow, this is your kind of spot here at the field. And now you got to kind of run with it and be at a certain level, right? And this is also too, when you come down to it, obviously you look at, you know, they have freshmen that you wouldn't expect to play, but now maybe those guys will have to play for at least a little bit, right? So we don't know. We have to see what they have in Leonard Moore. And obviously Carson Hobbs isn't on campus yet as competing, so we'll see there. The other thing is Clarence Lewis. Like, it's exactly why you want to have someone. Just insurance. Yeah. It's insurance, right? And Clarence Lewis, you know, yeah, do you want him to be matched up against the top guys in the country? No. Do you want him on the boundary taking Ben Morse's place? No. But I think if you're going to start him at field or play him even a bit at field, he can play.
Yeah.
He can play. And I think he's actually a much better field corner and like a pretty solid field corner. And you're just like for the one thing, and I have to go back and kind of look at like, you know, and I still am waiting to kind of see, cause you have to, there's so much to changes with the transfer portal in terms of the rosters and stuff and who gets added, because like, who knows, like Florida State just got Keon Coleman after last spring, right? Mm-hmm. And that obviously changed their thing. But I got to look at all the kind of receivers. But just on paper right now, I don't think Notre Dame's facing as many good receivers as they were a year ago, right? So that certainly isn't, you know, a bad thing, right? Like they're not there's less guys that you would have to worry about as like, oh, this guy's an elite guy that you have to match up against. So that's part of the equation too, but it also just brings into it where, well, if he's out for any extended amount of time, do you change the approach in terms of how much you pressure and all that kind of stuff? Because if you, I mean, they're a high pressure team. They're a high man coverage team last year. Maybe you aren't going to play as much man if that's the case. So I'll be interested to see what happens there and what you think about that.
It's just so hard to say. It's so hard to say, right?
It's like, hard to say without knowing.
We don't know where it's at. In my opinion, like with his shoulder, I don't know like a ton about shoulder injuries. I don't know that many. They're like, yeah, he's out for 6 months. Like it would have to be so bad. And it sounds like It sounds like this is something that maybe they tried to, I don't want to say play through, but like they decided to do this. It sounded like it, I don't know that it happened in practice or I don't know when it happened, but it just, we don't know the details, but it just seems to me that like, I don't think this was an injury and then right to surgery. I don't think that's how it happened. So to me, it's like, he'll probably be back for fall camp. He'll probably be back for the first game. It's not a huge deal, right? So I don't want to freak out about that. Luke, but should he not be available? I mean, like, to Coach Humph is making the point of, like, what's the point of speaking so glowingly about Coach Mickens if we don't think he's raised the level of the cornerback room to the point where we actually have more than one Morrison? I have zero concerns. He could be a first-team All-American at corner. And like, is it possible that Christian Gray could get to that level? It is possible, right? Is it possible that Leonard Moore could? I don't think Jaden Mickey has that in his bag. Just my opinion. He's a good player, right? He's fine. But I don't think he's like first team All-American. Like Ben Morrison is a special, special player. I mean, as soon as he stepped on campus, he was locking guys up, right? I mean, just like took the number one spot. Like immediately, right? So he's a special athlete. You just don't have guys like that. Like, so it wouldn't be a knock on Mickens to say, like, hey, Ben Morrison's out. This is a problem. You know, like, it is a problem. And I think you could still say Coach Mickens is doing a good job back there.
Yeah.
But like, you lose a guy like Ben Morrison. I mean, it's just
like anybody, if you lost Kyle Hamilton. I don't care. Name a team, name Georgia, Alabama, whatever. They lose Ben Morrison. It's the same thing, right? And first of all, too, like, we're talking like he's going to be out for, we don't know, right? But I'm just hypothetically, like, there just isn't somebody who, you know, it's not only is he All-American, whatever, he's going to be like a top 15 pick. He's probably the best corner that Notre Dame has had in like, since like Todd Light, probably like
Bobby, right? Taylor, like, or something.
Yeah. Bobby Taylor. Right. He's
really, yeah, good.
Like, so I mean, it's not even to say that the rest of the guys won't be great or they can't be fine and survive totally and still play great defense without him. Cause I don't believe like when Ben Morrison leaves that Notre Dame's going to stop being good at corner. I still think they're going to be very good at corner, but they might not have a Ben Moore. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, I mean, you know, Alabama didn't, even though as good as their corners were this year for Alabama, like, they're not Patrick Surtain. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't at that level. And that's kind of the level that Morrison is at. So I don't think it's like, it's nothing against Mickens or it's nothing against even the other guys on the team. It's just that, how many corners are there that have had his kind of ball production that have gone against other top guys as true sophomores and like shut them down? And, you know, he's probably going to take you to another level this year, right? So I just think it's, you know, it's totally fair to be like, man, they're gonna miss him if he's not available. I would say too, just the one thing I wanted to add in terms of like the wording of the injury and all that. Like, I think that, and it's something that with Marcus Freeman too, cause he's, you know, Greg, as you know, we've talked about this plenty of times, how Marcus Freeman is very, I would say cagey when he talks about how in terms of like,
yeah,
injuries and like when guys come back, and it's very like, you have no idea based on what he's saying. Right. Because, I think because he doesn't want to overpromise or anything, I think that's part of it. But I mean, this is just something, and I can only speak for what it has been with Notre Dame, but they've had a lot of guys come back and kind of like come back early and have to go and get stuff done again. So I don't even just talk about Riley Leonard just having to get his thing done again. And I don't even know who did Riley Leonard's. It's not a criticism of who did the surgery or the rehab or anything. I'm just saying, like, that's something that's happened. Like, the infamous Kevin Austin, oh, broke his foot. And then he comes back and then it's like, oh, well, he's out with his foot again. And he's out for the whole season, basically. Right. And then like Avery Davis is back from the ACL. Oh, look at him doing a camp. Oh, towards the ACL again. Right. Like there's been a decent number of those just over the course of time where guys have come back. But I I understand you got to be kind of careful with the wording because you just don't know. You don't want to say like, oh, he's going to be back because people recover differently. People have setbacks. You just don't know. But I'll just say one thing. If let's just say they don't have Mitchell Evans and Ben Morrison for the first month of the season. That's not great. Those are two of the best players on the team, right? Like, so I just, you know, that's just something that, I mean, could they easily survive without him and do well without him? Yeah, sure. But it's just, would you rather have him? Yeah, heck yeah, you would.
And to the other point, though, like, if he does end up, like, participating in fall camp and not, or maybe like he gets back like a week before the season. I don't care about this. Like he doesn't need reps. He doesn't need reps. He doesn't need to be out there learning the defense. He's played a ton of snaps. Missing spring for him is no big deal. It really isn't. It's only to the benefit of everyone else below him. Cause like it would be it. Honestly, it's more important for Mickey and for Gray and for Chance Tucker and Micah Bell to get those reps. It's much better for them. That is, if it was just spring, honestly, it is for the greater good of the team. Because yeah, no, there's nothing we can
for him.
There's nothing we can learn about Ben Morrison at this point. Like literally nothing. He's great, right? So. But it's just the uncertainty of it is what has kind of everyone a little bit concerned right now. And that's fair. I think it's a fair thing. And then Riley Leonard, you talked about this a little bit with Mike on Power Hour. And we had a question about, I think it came from Silverback that was on Irish Sports Daily. He posted some questions that you kind of answered in like an article piece, but I want to bring it up here. It's kind of frame it the way that he did. And it's about Angeli. Obviously he's going to be the number one now, or he's going to be working with the ones, most often. Kenny Minchie, the two, CJ Carr, the threes. He had a question. Can Angeli establish himself so firmly with the number one offense this spring that Leonard starts the season as quarterback two? So he's skipping a step there, right? You're skipping spring and then start the season as QB2. Basically, could Marcus Freeman, is there ever a world where he would name Angeli the starter after spring? I don't think so, right? No. But I guess to that point, is there a way for Angeli to play so well in the spring and like in the spring game that if he continues on that track, Riley Leonard like kind of can't catch him? Is there a way that takes place?
I think it's not very probable, but I think there is a small chance that could happen because you're going to go against Notre Dame's number one defense. And even without Ben Morrison, it's still a really good defense. It still is going to be as good as the defenses that they'll face all year, really, right? Like, you could argue that Notre Dame might not play a better defense all season than the one they face in practice all season. So, especially when you consider there's a lot of new receivers, there's a lot of stuff on the old line they got to figure out. So, if he comes in and navigates going against the number one defense and is like lights out the entire time, then sure. But he would have to make it so undeniable for that to happen that it just is so, so unlikely that it would happen. Like, you don't bring in Riley Leonard to do that you know, and not give him a shake, because he has to be able to prove that he could do this against Texas A&M on to start early, because Riley Leonard has done it. That's just a fact, right? Like, people can talk about, you know, certain things about, like, man, Leonard, you know, his percentage is this or that or whatever. Well, go back and watch the Clemson game, and he was the best player for Duke. He's the primary reason they won the game on offense was because of Riley Leonard. Go back to the Notre Dame game where he struggled for most of the game, like just about every other quarterback that played. I mean, Caleb Williams struggled against Notre Dame. And when the chips were down, it was like, well, they need scores here. They need to score touchdowns here to get back in the game to try to win the game. He drove them to touchdowns. And, you know, and a lot of it was with his legs and stuff too, right? But still, he was able to do it. And we highlighted that, you know, there's that one throw, that third and medium throw, where he had to fit it in that window over top of, like, you know, Junior Tuihalamaka dropped and he threw it. It's like, if that's an inch off, it's picked or tipped or whatever, right? And it was a perfect throw in that situation. All of a sudden they drive, score a touchdown, right? So that's just, Angeli has never done that, has never proven he can do that. He doesn't, what he did against Oregon State, you know, against a, you know, kind of a mishmash defense, you know, them with them having a lot of guys out, it doesn't really count in terms of what you would do to compare it to what Leonard has done in actual games. So, and him coming in garbage time, even though he looked great, it's not the same. You can't judge it. So you have to judge it by how he would do against this number one defense. And if he is looking, just sometimes it's just undeniable if someone's just doing that. If it gets to that point, then great. I mean, that's awesome for Notre Dame, right? But that's going to be really tough to do. And I mean, and whatever. And then we can kind of lead this into the next point. But, like, we just don't know that this is a perfect opportunity for, say, Kenny Minchie to get these reps. And he wasn't going to get the reps. Definitely not against the ones pretty much all spring. I bet if Leonard was healthy, Minchie, I bet, would have worked with the number one offense, zero reps.
Yeah.
Well, now he's going to get some. And he'll probably work against the twos quite a bit. And I think one of these things too, with, we've always heard about Minchie, is he's so talented. Like, he's so talented. He has more raw talent than Angeli. But, you know, he probably makes more, you know, he's, because he's younger and all these other factors, he probably makes more mistakes. He's probably makes some throws that he shouldn't, doesn't set the protection right, whatever, right? So now he gets a chance to kind of, like, work through his mistakes. And maybe all of a sudden by the end of spring, you're like, wow, he can run this first team offense, right? So you just don't know how it's going to play out. And you kind of just have to let it, let spring happen before, because there's, man, I was almost shocked by the number of people who were like, well, it's Angeli's job now. Like, I mean, slow it down. Like, it's just, it's not going to be that easy. And not even to say with the Minchie stuff, but it's just like, Angeli still has a lot to prove. Like, it's just, you can't just take what that sample size, whatever, because it's apples and oranges. You know, you're comparing two completely different things.
Yeah. So everything that was previously true about the quarterbacks is still true. You know, like, Riley Leonard still has all those abilities. Riley Leonard still is able to do the things that he was able to do, right? Like, it's not different now. The only thing, and I put this on Twitter, the only thing is that, and you kind of understand this too, because when you're on a football team, the guy who's there kind of all the time and running the team just kind of builds around that person.
Yeah.
And the reason you want your quarterback in the spring is so that the team starts to do that, right? So that's why you want Riley Leonard around in the spring, because you want the team to start to build around him. The offense starts to build around what he can do. Mike Denbrock learns what he can do. He learns the things that he is good at. He learns the things that he needs to work on. Like, that's what you want. Like, you want the team to be building around your quarterback's abilities. And they can't do that right now. And the other part is they have been doing that with Angeli. Angeli was the number one quarterback for all of bowl prep, all of it. He has been, he will now be the number one quarterback throughout the spring now, right? So the team has a ton of time and a ton of experience recently with Steve Angeli being the guy who's running their offense. So that's what it is, right? Jacob Paulus says the word I'm looking for is team chemistry, but it's a little bit more than that. It's more than chemistry, because it's chemistry, but it's also like
confidence in that guy.
Yeah, like you just get used to it and you like it, and you start to mold yourself around it. Like, it's more than chemistry with like the team.
It's like a lot of the things with the what made Ian Book great was because people, they had confidence. They were like, well, Ian Book is our guy. He is the guy for our team. And that helps shape the identity of the team.
Right. Right. And they start to take on the identity of that person. Yeah. And so it just kind of, that's a little bit of a wrinkle in this whole situation that will just be interesting to follow, right? And look, we don't know how the other practices have gone. We don't know how the team has taken to Riley Leonard, right? Like, we've heard things, but we don't really know. We haven't really seen it, you know? And so, unfortunately, we're not going to see it. And so that's just kind of a wild card that goes into that permeates throughout the rest of the spring, that permeates into summer workouts, and then fall camp. So that's going to be something to monitor. So now we're adding that to the monitoring list. And as far as, you know, your point about Minshew and Carr, it's huge for them, more so than Angeli, because Angeli was already going to get reps.
Yeah.
It's now huge. Those guys stay engaged. It's huge for Minshew. It's huge for Carr. Carr is going to actually get some like serious work now. So that for him, this is a very good, a very good situation. Jacob Paulus says, Ian Book's teammates have complete trust in him. Absolutely. That's true. Jacob Paulus says, who has the Google sheet of all the things being monitored? Hopefully, someone has set that up. Maybe Rajon can. He's here at every show. Rajon, do the thing with the thing. Yeah. With the stuff, we need a spreadsheet of things being monitored, and we need to get that going. I don't have a good transition for this one, Jamie. I messed it up. But I'm going to talk about our first sponsor, which is we're going to do VSR Media today, which is founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrazadeh. VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at vsrmediacompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. Marcus Freeman spoke to the media on, I guess it was Saturday, talked a little bit about offensive line and Emil Wagner. You know, they're happy with him. To me, it sounds to me like Emil Wagner is kind of not close. I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. Like, the way that he's talking about him is, it's like, yeah, like his weight is okay, it's fine. We just want him to keep like competing. We want him to keep getting out there. And I think that we kind of touched on this the last time we spoke about how, like, I think everyone is assuming that if he would just be 310, he's starting right tackle and he's going to be the guy. It sounds to me like Tosh Baker is kind of firmly ahead of him at this point. I was wondering if that was your impression as well.
I heard it is pretty close.
Interesting.
And I heard I actually heard that Tosh has looked pretty good. Like, yeah. And has, it, I think probably like having the path open up for him where he could play probably helped a lot. But I heard that it's like, I heard Emil Wagner has looked good.
Mm.
Like,
well, that's good news. I mean, that's definitely good.
Yeah. So I have heard that he has looked good. And that like the weight isn't like overly concerning.
Mm-hmm.
And that like, you know, even if he's not with the ones, it is probably more of a reflection of like Baker being good and like Baker playing well. And also too, like, let's be honest, they don't want Baker to transfer. Like, you know, just what with the depth they have at tackle.
For sure.
Like if to say that if Emil Wagner just jumped you know, Tosh Baker in the next practice in terms of like he's with the ones now and then Baker's with the twos, Baker's probably gone. You know, he's probably looking for somewhere else to play than spring. And I don't think that they certainly, I mean, I don't think they would want that to happen. I heard that I heard pretty good stuff about both those guys, so that they're feeling pretty good about both of those. So like, I know, because I would say based on what Freeman had said, that you'd be like, it's tough to say because he's just, also it just seems like whatever, especially because maybe it's because the players and parents or whatever, and then this day of NIL, whatever, it's like people are overly sensitive to like hearing about like if someone's getting praised, that means they're talking bad about someone or someone else or something like that. So like, for instance, him only mentioning that like Bryce Young physically, and then he kind of like walked it back because he was like, you know, I don't want to say because everyone's got their different stuff. And I don't even think that he was just, this is just me speculating, but I was thinking that as soon as he said that, I was like, he's doing this not just because you don't want to like get people upset about their kind of like everyone's on a different curve in terms of, you know, where you're at in terms of your development, but also too, like, it's just so sensitive with guys. Like if some guy thinks like, I think you look at like, so like Braylon James last year,
mm-hmm.
if you're always hearing about, man, Rico Flores and Jaden Greathouse, these guys are just like, they came in ready to go. Like, and that was like such a big topic for all of spring and then fall camp. And then obviously Jordan Faison came in, whatever. And it was like crickets about Braylon James. I mean, should he be been more patient and whatever? Yeah. Okay. Sure. But it's like, some guys and some parents and whatever, they're just like overly sensitive with that stuff. So you got to be careful. So I took note of that because I was like, you just don't want to say, and it's the smart thing, but it's not good for us in terms of talking about what is going on and who's progressing and who's not. But it's kind of the smart way to do it because I just know for a fact that parents, like when they're like, my kid didn't get mentioned here. Like I definitely know there have been guys who have transferred because they're like, their kid didn't get mentioned, or like they didn't get mentioned in a press conference. This was like earlier, whatever, not with a Freeman thing, this was previously, but like they didn't get mentioned when they were mentioning all one position group and they didn't mention this one guy. And it was like, well, I guess I'm not in the plans, and it could have been just like, you know, I just didn't decide to mention, I mentioned six guys instead of seven or whatever. And then just, boom. But it's like a thing now because you just got to keep everybody happy. You don't want to lose people that might be players for you later on. So it's a weird, like, you could say maybe it's being overly sensitive, and obviously we'd love for him and for all the coaches to share more, but when you're not sharing that much about it, I think part of it is motivated by, well, if I praise this guy too much, then I'm not, you know, this other guy might feel a certain way about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. And also, like, I recommend everyone, if Marcus Freeman talks, like, to the media and they post it, I recommend everyone watching it, because the way that some quotes get written about is, in my opinion, not how it kind of should be portrayed, but by the way that Marcus talked about it. Because sometimes he'll answer a question and it's just like, you can tell it's like, oh, I haven't really given this a ton of thought. I'm going to mention like this guy and this guy, but you can tell like, I he's not really like breaking down a position group, or he's breaking down, you know, like he didn't mention KVA with that. It's like, you just mentioned Bryce Young, right? But sometimes it's just like, you could tell, it's like, he didn't really think this through very much. So just don't worry about it. But like, yeah, it'll be written as if like people will say, like, or I'll see on Twitter, like, hey, he didn't mention X guy. He didn't mention KVA. He didn't mention Mikey Gilbert. So we heard good things. Yeah. What's going on with them? It's like, well, maybe nothing. He just said something in a press conference, you know, like sometimes he'll go up there and you can tell like he is talking very analytically about, you know, the guards or the linebackers or whatever it may be. And sometimes he's just answering a question to just kind of answer the question, you know? So I think everyone should kind of take heed of that.
Watch, especially in spring too. I think it's very precarious of like guys being like, cause during the season, there's chances you can like walk somebody back off a cliff, you know? Yeah. But in the spring, if guys are like, well, I mean, the writing's on the wall for me, like that happens. And also too, I would not get worried about him not mentioning KVA, because I'm pretty sure KVA is
he's a stud.
Yes,
he's a stud. Yeah,
all reports glowing so far.
What you just said about parents and you know, that they didn't mention my kid, I do wonder, and I'll bet. It's very hard for parents now. I don't know how it was like really when I was younger, because my dad was always my coach, so he always knew how I was doing. But I think now parents are very used to like going to practice and having a lot of access.
Being there, yeah.
Yeah, they get all the access. They know exactly how things are going. And when you go to Notre Dame, you don't get anything. You get literally nothing. And except for your son coming home and you ask them like how to go, like you would be shocked at how many parents I talk to who are like, I don't know really what's going on. Like he doesn't really tell me, or he doesn't really tell me what's happening, or he doesn't talk about it very much.
Those are usually the best parents, because they're the most level headed, because they're not hanging on every word that Marcus Freeman or the position coach is saying in a press conference. Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't know, right? They're not sure, right? And but the point is like the players, the kids don't really talk to them, and they don't get to go to practice. They don't see it. So they don't see the progress, or, you know, this is why he's behind this guy, or this is why he is not out there as much, right? And I could imagine it being very difficult, right? Just like, I want to know what's going on, right? I sent my kid to Notre Dame. I just want to know. Like, so I could see them struggling with that, right? So I wonder how Notre Dame kind of mitigates that stuff.
And the thing is, too, is with all these guys, and this is just a reality, is that if you're going to Notre Dame and you're on scholarship, you were a great player in high school. You were, you know, not just the best player on your team or one of the best players on your team, you're one of the best players in your city, in your state, in whatever.
In the history of your school, you know, like that's usually the case.
So it's just like, you know, when you go to the NFL and you're an All-American in college, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, now you're a rookie again. And you got to just, it's an adjustment, right? It's an adjustment. And, you know, there's only so many guys that are just like, you know, the Kyle Hamiltons, the Michael Mayers, possibly KVA, whatever, like those guys that you can walk in and just like, you're like, it happens right away because they're just at that level, like immediately. And they're just, it's so few. And there's been so many great players, you know, and just even just bringing it back to Benjamin Morrison, he was a guy that it was like kind of obvious right away too. Right. Yeah. So they're just, it doesn't always happen like that too. It's very rare.
And Rajon says, social media doesn't help. Lots of bad info. Not just that, but there's also people traffic in rumors and gossip, you know, and like that's the, I don't want to say their business model because it's not like a business, but like people traffic in that stuff. They thrive off of the gossip and the rumors and X person said, and this person said, and I heard this. Like there's so much of that in the space, especially at a program like Notre Dame, which has a ton of attention on it, right? There's a lot of people who talk about Notre Dame football, right? So it's like that's tough too. And that's hard for just if you're looking for information, right? If you're thirsty for the info or you want to find out, like Rajon said, like it just, you can get a lot of bad info there as well. All right. We're going to introduce a new segment called If You Build It. We're building, and today we're going to do it. We're going to build our perfect quarterback. And so we're going to take pieces from different quarterbacks. I assume we're going to do Notre Dame.
Yeah, Notre Dame.
Notre Dame quarterbacks. Notre Dame quarterback. We're going to build a perfect Notre Dame quarterback, qualities from different quarterbacks. We're going to put it together, and we're going to build the number one pick in the draft. And this segment is brought to you by ESQ Clothing. We're going to build a perfect Notre Dame quarterback, and you can build your perfect wardrobe with ESQ, founded by Notre Dame alum Ga Wang. You've seen ESQ on all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches with over a decade of making the best custom clothing available. ESQ will help you look and feel your best in 2024 from a perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season. Check out Ga's amazing work at esqclothing.com and book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention ISD and get 10% off your entire purchase. All right, Jamie, why don't we start with you? Build your perfect quarterback. Where do you want to start? Build your perfect quarterback.
Well, I figured we go like this, and we go back and forth, and we'll talk about just like kind of just different traits and qualities there. And I think, first of all, if you want to take it back all the way, I know there's some people that are a lot older than us who listen to the show that have, you know, certainly watched a lot of great Notre Dame quarterbacks, but I'm only going to mention quarterbacks that I have watched. So
you've watched, okay.
So even to say that, like, Joe Montana, obviously I've watched Joe Montana play football, but I wasn't born when Joe Montana played football for Notre Dame. Like, yes, I'm very aware of the chicken soup game and, you know, all these things that he did and accomplished. I've read plenty of things. I've seen highlights, whatever. But I can't just say Joe Montana, you know, clutch, whatever, pocket, whatever. I can't do that because I didn't see him. You know, I didn't see him. So I'm basically going like essentially late 80s, early 90s and on. So we'll set that kind of parameters there. And I think I start with accuracy. And I'm going to say accuracy, number one to me, is Jimmy Clausen.
I 100%. You can't go any other direction. Jimmy Clausen could put the ball anywhere you want. He every time he threw the ball with accuracy and threw the ball with time, and he's in a clean pocket, that ball is going to be exactly where you want it to be. You can't remember like spin, and I'll include deep ball with this as well. You know, like deep ball as well. He threw the best deep ball at Notre Dame with respect to Sam Hartman, of course. But he could just drop it in a bucket. So accuracy, Jimmy Clausen, 100%. I think that is 100% true. And that was going to be mine as well. So you nailed it with that one. I think we should go with just build here, right? I think we should just go with build, right? And Bernie, our guy Bernie, nailed it, right? It's Brady Quinn. It has to look like Brady Quinn.
He does look like the prototype.
Built. Look, good height, right? Like he's not small. He's got the perfect build. Never injured, right? Like, how many hits did he take in 03 and 04, Jamie? Just getting his butt whooped all over the place. Never got hurt. Never came out. That was one thing about Brady Quinn that people don't talk about as much. They talk about the other things, but it's like a very tough, durable player. So he's got to have the accuracy of Jimmy Clausen. He's got to be built like Brady Quinn. Where do you want to go next, Jamie?
Let's just talk about arm strength.
Okay.
And, you know, I was debating this one and I thought about my guy, Jarius Jackson, because Jarius Jackson could rip it.
Yeah.
He could rip it. But I went with DeShone Kizer because I think if you look at the totality of some of his throws that he made, we were like, man, he could really sling it. And I think you could argue that maybe like Jarius Jackson, if you just straight fastball, maybe he is the more of the fastball, but just the totality of like the kind of throws that you were like this in a tight window in like Kizer to me was the one.
I see for arm strength, I'm going with, Malik Zaire, who could just.
He did have a big arm, yes.
Chuck. I mean, he's a perfect quarterback for Will Fuller, too, because Fuller could just he could just outrun under anything. And he had the ability. He did this in a spring game. He threw the deep ball, like the one like really good deep ball to Fuller against Virginia, the first one, the first touchdown to make it, I guess it was 19-14 at the time. Just chucked it. And the guy in the booth is like, I thought he overthrew him, but then he didn't. He did it in a spring game against Nick Watkins too, the 2015 spring game. Well, I was like, man, Nick Watkins, like he just had no chance to run with Fuller on this one. And the way he placed it, like to me, if he had the arm strength of Zaire with the accuracy of Clausen, I mean, now you're cooking with gas, you know? I mean, that's like Clausen would have had a longer career, you know, without all the other stuff, if he had the arm strength like that, cause that was his thing. He didn't have the strongest arm, but he was super accurate. Jason Smith said, didn't Golson have a cannon? He had a good arm. But he didn't have like a cannon, you know, like his intermediate routes, like his over the middle throws, like he could really plan it. So he could really throw seeds on those, Jamie.
If you were going to say pure thrower of the football,
yeah,
Golson. I mean, it's Golson or Clausen.
Golson or Clausen. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's do legs. Let's do legs, Jamie. What kind of legs are you looking for here?
I mean, this is the one thing. This one is very tough because obviously there's so many guys, and like you could go back to obviously Tony Rice. You know, obviously he was the first quarterback that I can remember watching games of, you know, and certainly a very talented runner. I mean, you could even, I don't know if it's kind of cheating, but you could even go Arnez Battle. Because Arnez Battle, when he played quarterback, was a he was a dynamic runner. And obviously, Jarius Jackson was a great runner, more of a power runner, but like he was a great runner. And Ian Book, too, deserves to be mentioned. He does, because he had an ability to kind of make guys miss and do some things and was a far better athlete than a lot of people gave him credit for. But you got to go with Brandon Wimbush here, I think, because he's just there just wasn't anyone like him who had his speed, ability to kind of break tackles, ability to kind of break it for long ones. He just had this that kind of extra gear that he could take it to. I would say his 2017 as a runner was better than any other one that I can think of in terms of just the quality of runs that he made. Just to, you know, get first downs and not just the big plays, right? Like he, for me, he was the guy that I think would scare defenses the most, you know, as a runner.
Yeah. He had, so he had the long speed, right? Where he's a guy like the Boston College game, where it's just like running for 200 plus. Like that's like, he just had a guy. It's like, you get him out in the open. It's like, this is dangerous, you know? So I could see that. Does Riley Leonard count? Because if I can't pick Riley Leonard, I'm gonna pick Wimbush. But if Riley Leonard had played like two games for Notre Dame or like a game for Notre Dame, I might pick Riley Leonard because he
is the closest I think to Wimbush. Yeah,
he is. He's bigger too. That's the other thing. Like he is a big guy, and he is. I'm telling you, people like. And this is the thing with his ankle too, where it really needs to get better because a lot of his value comes in the fact that he can run and he can really run. I mean, he's a long speed guy. He's a short yardage guy. He can hit home runs. I mean, look, I picked him to rush for over 1,000 yards, you know? So like, I certainly feel like he can be the best runner that Notre Dame's ever had. Honestly, I do think that. But I agree with you. You got to go with Wimbush. He was a track guy. I mean, he ran track in high school, and he was a good 200 meter runner. I do think you need to have legs like his. And so that's kind of where I would go with that. How do you want to choose like heart or IQ, or how do you want to evaluate that? Like moxie, competitiveness, brains. Which one of those? How do you want to do
it? I think we could go moxie because that kind of is like clutch. That's kind of like
clutch.
You know, yeah.
Let's go clutch. All right. So you have the clutch gene. I think this is where you throw in McDougal here. I think this is where you throw in McDougal. Yeah. You throw in McDougal here. You got to throw in Rice. You throw in, I'll throw in Ian Book in this as well. And so with Ian, I think that there's the moxie, the clutchness associated with him, like sticking around for as long as he did, like waiting his turn and earning the job. You know, late comeback win against Virginia Tech, right? Just a quality performer, most wins in the history of the school. You have McDougal, who had the 1 year in 93, goes, waits his turn again, waits behind Rick Meyer, beats Michigan in the big house, in the big game, has a long run, right? Beats Florida State, has the comeback against Boston College, right? Led the comeback 39-38. Pete Bursich, if he holds on to the interception, Kevin McDougal's like a hero and, you know, probably wins a national championship quarterback. Derek May said he was the best quarterback he ever played with. Derek May said this on this show. It's a true fact. So there's that. And then there's Tony Rice, right? Wins the national championship in 88, 89. They beat like 9 ranked teams, something to that effect. Went beat number 1 Colorado in the bowl game. I don't know if this is a shocker, Jamie. I'm going with McDougal. Ooh, I want McDougal's. Because here's, I have some other things. Okay. This is another thing that Derek Mays told me. Okay. And I like guys like this. And I know that you'll understand this as well. Derek Mays said, best quarterback he ever played with, best golfer he ever played with, scratch golfer, best basketball player he ever played with. When you have a guy who is the best at everything, I want that guy playing quarterback for me. I want that competitiveness. I want that moxie. I want that kind of mindset leading my team. And that's what I want. I'm going with McDougal.
And not like Kim Jong-un being named as the best ever. No. Actually being
great. Yes. Yeah. At a school like Notre Dame.
No fake news. Yeah. Fake. I you know what? As you were going down the list before with McDougal, I switched to McDougal as well. And I really just I think it is him. And it's just he's only hurt by the play in the 1 year. That's the thing, right?
Yes.
He's hurt by the play in the 1 year. But I would say that, I mean, it's awfully to me, it's awfully close with Ian Book because, man, the guy, he is criminally underrated all the time because of, you know, some of the things that he wasn't good at. It, to me, if we're going to go just like scrambling ability, if it's like, okay, things are breaking down or improvising, I'm taking Ian Book as my improvisational quarterback. It's like, you know, escape the rush, things breaking down, him making a play. Think about just not just like those little flip plays that he made, but just like so many times where you're like, oh my God, it's 3rd and 7. And you're like, gosh, that first read isn't there. And you're like, as soon as you see Book running, you're like, well, they're getting a first down. Like it just was automatic. And then also just, he had a lot of clutch comeback wins, right? Mm-hmm. Where he didn't necessarily play good in those games up to that point, but he came through when it mattered, right? So, I mean, to me, Rajon, Rick Meyer, I don't think the thing about Rick Meyer was, I don't know if he was outstanding in any of the categories, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was seen as in a certain light because of, you know, there was a lot of like, oh, this guy could be Montana because he had great footwork and he was, you know, light on his feet. He was a good athlete. He had a good arm, but I don't know if he was the best at anything. And people viewed him as him having this kind of specialness that, you know, Joe Montana had, but he didn't really have that. And I mean, to be fair, there's been like 4 quarterbacks in the history of football who probably had the same thing that Joe Montana had, right? So it's just, so that's why when he's, for me, I don't even think about him and really in any of these terms for this stuff.
What hurts, I'll tell you what hurts Meyer. 2 things. The 1990 season, losing to Stanford, which I don't know if people have seen this. It's on YouTube. On the last play of the game, and I found this out like, I don't know, a year ago, like because I found the game on YouTube. I always knew Notre Dame lost to Stanford in 1990, 36-31. And it's like you knew that it happened, but you don't know how it happened. Well, it turns out on the last play of the game, Holtz calls roll out, roll right, throw back to the tight end, right? Which is always open. And it was. And Derek Brown dropped it in the end zone. They would have won the game. There's literally no time on the clock. They would have won 37-36. So no time on the clock. Derek Brown drops the ball. Notre Dame loses that game. So that's one of their losses. And then in the Orange Bowl, Rocket gets the clipping penalty call back, which had that happened. If you won Stanford and Notre Dame won that Orange Bowl, then they're going to be national championships. They could have been national champions had Notre Dame beaten Colorado in that game because Colorado was the number one team in the country. And Notre Dame was, I think, 4th. But the team that Colorado shared, the Georgia Tech team, was like 10-1-1. Like they had a tie. Notre Dame had better wins than them. Like there was, you could see a situation where they had shared the national title at that time. So that was a situation where it's like, if they win national title, people think a lot differently about Rick Meyer, but they didn't. And then in 92, when they tied Michigan, it's just like he didn't do really anything in that game, you know? So that was a tie, and everyone remembers the Reggie Books run. And then, you know, you lose to Stanford again, which was a really bad loss, really not good. I mean, everyone talks about the 92 team, about how that was like the most talented team that Holtz might have ever had. I mean, they had
– consider all those 93 guys and then
– yeah.
Oh, my God.
Tons and tons of talent, right? Like all the 93 guys plus Jerome Bettis and Reggie Brooks and Rick Meyer, right? So, you know, that's just
I mean, I'm sure Notre Dame historians would probably say, like, if you looked at the most talented teams in Notre Dame history, and obviously it's way different eras, obviously, but right. Like, you know, 46-47 is considered because obviously they had all those guys come back from war. And they were just loaded. Like they had, you know, multiple Heisman Trophy winners on the team. They were just, you know, they could go. They literally would run the ones out and then they'd run the twos out of the thing. They were so deep and loaded for those teams. And, you know, it's a different era, but that is considered their, you know, that's the best Notre Dame teams, right, of all time of those. But like, I mean, just straight off raw talent, 92 and 93, it's right up there. It's right up there. And it's just, unfortunately, they got screwed out of the 93 title and, you know, didn't win it in 92, right? So it's unfortunate, but it's always a big what if for Notre Dame.
Yeah, Tom Carter was on that team. Irv Smith was on that team. Forgetting someone.
Bettis,
yeah,
Brooks, on that team, right? Bettis, like Brooks.
So, it's a very good team. One of the best teams not to win a national title. So, all right, that's we built our quarterback, Jamie. We got the build of Brady Quinn. We've got the accuracy of Jimmy Clausen. Got the arm strength. Where do you want to go? Arm strength? You want to go Zaire or Kaiser? We can go Kaiser. He was probably more accurate with his arm strength. He was. He was definitely – he had the better, more accurate arm. So we can go Kaiser there. Kaiser arm strength, Wimbush legs, and like the kind of the moxie competitiveness of Kevin McDougal. And those are – that's going to be a good time. All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please hit the like. Please hit subscribe. Please hit the notification bell soon ever it is. We are going live. We'll be back on Thursday with more talk about spring ball and Notre Dame football, things of that nature. Look out for a show with Dimes with Dara. We're going to be talking about the first and second round of the NCAA tournament and on to the Sweet 16. So looking out for that. That'll be coming out either tomorrow or Thursday. All right, everyone. Have a good rest of your week. We'll talk to you soon. Keep hitting and hustling.